Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today for Live Dharma Sunday. Please note that if you have called in to listen to today's broadcast, that all lines have been placed on mute to avoid background interference. If you're listening from any of our Bright Dawn sites, note that it is not necessary to call in. You may have to wait a second or two for the loading and buffering process to complete, but if there is still no audio, please refresh your page. For more information about Bright Dawn and its activities and links to our social media sites, please visit brightdawn.org. Once again, thank you for listening to Live Dharma Sunday, and enjoy the talk.
Welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for April 26, 2020. Koyo Kobose here, so very, very glad you joined us. Yes, we certainly live in interesting times, and it's really something, sort of like science fiction with this virus situation. Well, well, we feel so fortunate that we're sheltering in place at the Bright Dawn Center here. Our lifestyle really hasn't changed since we're both retired, and we're already sort of isolated on a 6-acre wooded property, and our lifestyle really didn't change that much, you know, except for we can't go out to eat. A lot of times, I'll tell you, we got into a habit that after Live Dharma Sunday, which is 8 o'clock Pacific time, our time, that we reward ourselves after the broadcast, and we go out to the local Greasy Spoon and have breakfast on every Sunday morning. So we miss that. In springtime, you know, our property, when we turn into our driveway from Margaret Road, it's a long driveway, gravel about 300 feet maybe. And as we drive, when we come home, when we're driving down this long driveway, sometimes squirrels or rabbits, they run across the driveway, and we have a private joke among ourselves. Adrian and I have a private joke among ourselves, and we imagine that these animals are shouting, "They're back," you know. But I was looking at the rabbits becoming more numerous, and they have big ears. Rabbits have really big ears, and of course when I get on that topic, I think about Dharma ears. That this is a reminder or a teaching that we need to have big Dharma ears, the better to hear the Dharma teachings with. Huh? To hear the Dharma teachings means, well, just to become more aware of the teachings that are all around us, okay? Not just in the auditory modality, but you know, whatever we happen to notice, some image or visualness, and the Dharma's all around us. That means the Dharma is inside of us. or it's like putting on Dharma glasses. And then you see, oh, that is just an ordinary object or something, you know, in my environment. But it could be the source of Dharma teachings. If I have the ears, Dharma ears, to hear the teaching. Okay. So I was thinking about that when I was thinking about all these rabbits. And it's kind of strange, interesting, where sometimes the rabbits get kind of numerous, but they won't stay numerous because we have very close by in our physical environment, we have bobcat and we have some coyotes. Very interesting. And I would imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine that these animals, like bobcat, one bobcat and, you know, a lot of coyotes around, that they know their territory. They're familiar with, you know, their physical space around them. And when they see too many rabbits around, they'll say, hey, easy pickings. You know, this is the balance of nature, I guess you could call it. And as I think about rabbits, I'm reminded about that every year I go get rabbit manure from someone who had advertised in Craigslist. Oh, it's been maybe over 5 years now. Every year I go, and he has I don't know if it's part of his livelihood or for sure it's his sort of hobby. He has a lot of rabbits, and he lives, again, on a rural, wooded area, and it takes a drive to go to his place. But on his property, which is more like a farm, I guess, is all kind of animals. But he must have over 100 rabbits, and they're show rabbits. They're in cages and under an enclosure. I've seen him online when they go to certain shows and they take the rabbits. You know, I guess they're special. I don't know anything about the rabbit breeding and rabbit shows, but the certain breeds or whatever, and that's a whole world there. Okay, if you're into showing rabbits, okay, not just your ordinary rabbits, but okay, you can probably breed them for certain heuristics and so forth, and. Rabbit manure is just pebbles, and it's dry. Okay, so it's not like it's messy or stinky really, and so we get to shovel up quite a few big black plastic trash bags with a shovel, and we go in. There's a big pile there where they put it from underneath the cages, and they pile it up in a big pile, and I go to that big pile, or sometime I would go into the enclosure and just get it from underneath the cages, because I feel good about doing that, because then I'm helping them out to do that anyway. Okay, so we do that, and I get maybe 20 bags and put them in the back of our pickup truck and bring them home and, you know, put them into our raised beds. I have 11 raised beds. Each bed is 4 by 20 feet. And over the years, I built up compost. And I've used different kind of manure in there. I've used rabbit manure is supposed to be tops. Very good fertilizer. Okay. But I've used chicken manure. You can go in any nursery place. You could buy cow manure, and these are all good. And there isn't there a lesson there when you think about that manure is fertilizer? You know, because usually you think of manure as something pretty stinky, pretty bad, something you know that doesn't have any redeeming qualities. It's waste product. Okay? But it's organic. It's from life, the life processes. Huh? And there's a cycle there. It goes back into the earth, huh? Or it could fertilize and bring out more life in terms of plant life and so forth. When I think about chicken manure, I always remember Fritz Perls, who was a psychologist, he had these different psychologists or therapists have different methods or approaches to how they interact with clients. And he tries to make people, one source of, I don't know if you call it a defense mechanism, where people, when they talk, they're not really being authentic to themselves. Their speech is unauthentic. Okay? It's not really, for example, Fritz Perls says, hey, there's, when you talk about communication, when you talk about someone talking, that sometimes it's not, he calls it three kinds of shit. Yeah, I was kind of hesitating because I didn't want to use that word. But that's the word he uses. Okay, and this is in a psychology textbook, and of course it's for educational purposes, so it's okay. Three kinds of shit, three kinds of speech that's unauthentic. And the first kind is called chicken shit. This is little stuff. This is trivial. This is social, how are you? Hey, good to see you. Good morning. It's just trivial. Okay? It's just, it doesn't mean anything. It's not authentic. Right? You don't really want to know somebody, how are you? Huh? And if that person sometimes says, oh, I'm not doing so well, and starts to talk too much, then the person might say, hey, I really didn't mean it when I asked, how are you? How are you doing? So chicken shit, a little social, unauthentic speech. Then the next kind of shit is BS, bullshit. Now this is the common meaning of bullshit. That's a lot of bullshit. Okay? It means excuses, rationalizations. You're not really facing or expressing authenticness in your speech. That's just a lot of BS. Huh? Then, interestingly enough, Fritz Perls talks about the third kind of shit. Okay? In addition to chicken shit, bullshit. Okay? Bullshit, of course, is bigger than chicken shit. Okay? But if you want to get into the really big shit, he talks about the third kind, elephant shit. By elephant shit, he means over-psychologizing, psychobabble, and intellectual people, educated people, are very prone to that kind of unauthentic speech. They just start, it's over intellectualization of something. It's not really authentic, heartfelt speech. You just start running some kind of old mental tapes, It sort of reminds me of one of my friends who was a teacher in the Chicago City Colleges, and he left that profession because it got too rote for him. He would teach the same course every semester. He would have his notes all, it's all prepared what he's going to talk about. And he comes into class, And he says, well, where did I leave off, class? And they'll say, oh, you talked about it. And so he would turn to his lecture notes. He's not really teaching, you know. He's lecturing. And it became rote. It became boring. It became a comfortable rut. In terms of right livelihood, you want something that you put your heart into. Okay. So this is part of maybe unauthentic speech. Or if another phrase that I sometimes am reminded of is verbal diarrhea, you know, where you're just running off at the mouth. You're not really interested in communicating. Okay. Sometimes two people, even if they're strangers, they're on a bus or they're in a waiting room, doctor's waiting room or something, two people meet each other and they start talking about their family, talking about their problems or whatever. That is really, you see them both talking at each other, not to each other. And they're not really paying attention to what the other person is saying. They're just interested in what they want to express. And no one, neither one is listening to the other. I think we humans are prone to this kind of communication process to others, you know. And in fact, there's a therapist that I know that he suggested categorizing three aspects of communicating to others: ethos, pathos, and logos. Kind of interesting. He says ethos is the facts of a situation. Pathos is the emotions or feelings about something. And logos is intellectualization, explanations. Okay? The intellectual abstract concepts involved or something like this. Okay? And sometimes the line between these three types of communication get blurred. Sometimes you think you're talking about one thing and you're talking about the other. Okay? But it helps to be aware. This is just a, what do you call helpful categorization to become clearer about how you communicate to others. Okay? Sometimes you want to clarify, well, what are we talking about here? What are the facts of this situation? And then sometimes you're really expressing your feelings of how you feel about something. Okay? And other times, the logos part is where you, maybe this is where is the over-intellectualization of something. Instead, you know, talking about something, the abstract concepts involved, or giving advice. Yeah? This is where it gets kind of interesting, where among friends, among friends when it's in one friend trying to help another friend who has some kind of problem. Or, of course, it could be a parent-child. It could be therapist to a client, or domestically in the family. Okay. How would we communicate? Sometimes we're just saying, hey, what's going on? You know, the communication is ethos. That is, they're just getting informed what's going on. What's with somebody's life or with some situation that you want to inform others about. Other times, it's pathos, which is feelings. Okay? Now, sometimes when friends talk to each other, they know what the facts are. They know how to handle a problem, approach a problem. But what they're communicating as friends to each other is here's my pain. And you want someone to share your pain. Okay? Here's his pathos. So, man, this is how you feel. And you respond with your feelings. Can you imagine somebody that goes to the logos part where says, well, you know, what you ought to do is this, or some psychologists say this, or, hey, you know, this might help you doing this. You may be sincere in offering your advice, but they don't need advice. Huh? They don't need all that logos. They could hear lectures. They could read books. They could, you know. Somehow they just need a human connection of, well, sort of misery loves company, or being feeling understood, feeling humanness there. Okay. Not just the facts or explanations, conceptual, abstract concepts, and so forth. Okay. That's what friendship is all about. That's what family is all about, isn't it? The most important part of communication. Feelings. You know? And I remember a friend of mine who was a therapist. One time he just offhand said, you know, if I ever get bored while listening to a client, then I know that there's nothing valuable going on here. If someone's really describing something important, you don't get bored listening to that person. But as a therapist, if he ever, you know, he's sensitive to the fact that, well, if he starts to feel like he's getting bored, then he knows that this client is just, they're wasting their time. This client is just running some old mental tapes, or, you know, and so forth. There's not going to be any real revelation or opportunities for growth. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That when some real stuff comes out, the listener, the therapist, they don't get bored, even though the session might be long. Huh? Isn't that interesting? Well, this is what rabbits running across our driveway and led to manure and three kinds of shit and where we communicate and verbal diarrhea and all this stuff. Eh? The Dharma's all around us. Let us hear a Dharma glimpse from our guest today, Gina. Gina-san lives in Arizona. She's part of our current LM12 group that will be finishing up their two-year program this May. So let's hear from Gina-san.
Hi, this is Gina Thunder with my Dharma Glimpse. On Sunday mornings, I am the first to arrive at the Buddhist temple where I set up the chairs and cushions for the Dharma meditation group. For years, the Dharma bowl has been kept on a table in the front near the Buddha statue. A few Sundays ago, I noticed the monks had moved the Dharma bowl on a shelf in the back near the exit door. This was a great place for it because it was easily accessible as people left. They had also placed a sheet of paper above the bowl, which read, "Donations, your contributions will help general running costs of this facility. Thank you." All is good. Not really, at least not in my mind. The paper sign had been taped to the wall with yellowish colored tape. My mind took off with thoughts of, looks untidy, looks tacky. I can't believe they did that. I want the temple to look nice. What were they thinking? And on and on and on it went. And I'm actually embarrassed to say that my continued judgment went on for weeks. Every time I entered the temple, that sign and tape irritated me. Why don't the monks make a nice sign? I don't get it. Then I had a glimpse of the Dharma. Why am I waiting for the monks or someone else to do something about the sign? The temple belongs to the community. Many people donate their money, time, and skills to help with the upkeep of the building and grounds. So So that week, I purchased a frame and looked forward to hanging a nice-looking sign above the Donna Bowl. I thought I would be free at last from my ongoing criticism. But there is more. On the official sign-hanging Sunday morning, I arrived to the temple earlier than usual with a hammer, hook, and the framed Donna Bowl sign. The head monk, Bhante Ananda, was also there. With a smile on my face, I quickly pulled the nicely framed sign from my bag for him to see. Never said a word, just looked at it. His expression never changed, no smile, no thank you, nothing. He just looked at it, then began talking about something else, and he left a few minutes later. I was left alone to hang the sign, completely alone, stripped of my ego. Bhante Ananda left the room with my ego tucked away in his robe. Now I was finally...
Pretty good, pretty good. You know, that's a nice glimpse because, in a way, there are layers, aren't there? Textures of it. And the self-introspection, self-reflection and introspection is the Buddhist methodology. Buddhist practice, okay, at its most fundamental, to be aware of how we're interacting with what's going on. Huh? So you see this tacky sign? You say, hey, no, man, you know, it insults your artistic, you know, notion. It's not neat. And indeed, you say, why am I irritated? To become aware of your judgmental irritation, you know. And especially when it's in a spiritual place, okay, place of practice, that this is what's going on. And you say, well, how come? And if you look at it a little bit more, you say, well, how come they didn't make a better sign. Then, as she said, why don't I make a sign then? Instead of just complaining about, you know, others. So then she makes the nice sign. And she feels so good about it. Huh? And then she doesn't get any feedback about, hey, you made a great sign. Wow! As she hangs it up, there's the more deeper introspection of, hey, what about this process of life, things happening, situations arising, okay, how we handle things, how we think about those things that happen, you know, how our self-centered ego infiltrates, colors our assessment, our judgment of ourselves, of the situation. It really is layered, textured, I guess is the word. And that shows, I think, a never ending, there's no answer really. There's nothing like, oh, this is the way it gets processed. Okay. And something like that could be fodder, could be a source of new opportunities. Okay. It comes from actual life, huh? It's not a big thing. It's not like, hey, you know, But it's real authentic. It's real person, okay? Life experience. Okay? As common as it might be, as ordinary as it might be, not earth-shattering. But it could be a source of continuing Dharma teachings in all kinds of ways. I hope she doesn't put a period on it. I hope she doesn't keep that as a gem and put it, that precious stone in a little felt bag that you can say, hey, here's an example of a great teaching that I received. But I hope that it to remain alive, to remain viable, okay, don't put a period on it, okay? As my father would say, okay, that it's an open reservoir that adds to a lot of teachings. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a beautiful day.